and thank you for downloading Wax Lyrical, the marketing and advertising podcast from Wax On and the Marketing Society. And I'm Mark Runicus.
Hi, and I'm Paul Jacobs. And today's podcast is all about honey, because our guests are the founders of Black Bee Honey, Chris Barnes and Paul Webb. So obviously, we're going to be talking about bees, beekeeping, and much more, I'm sure. Welcome, Chris, Paul. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi, guys. Hello. Thanks for having us on the show.
I, for one, I'm very much looking forward to learning more about your business, your founder story. You guys didn't start in honey, so we'll hear a bit more about that. And of course, the fascinating life of a bee. And I, for one, will say that it's certainly, honey is way more than what I put in my Weetabix. So let's dive in.
I admitted in our pre-chat that my mum is a big fan of honey, and I grew up having it smeared all over me. You can tell me some of the weirder things you've heard your customers do with your honey, I'm sure. But is this true, that a honeybee can fly at 15 miles an hour, and that bees must gather nectar from 2 million flowers in order to make 1 pound of honey, but it would only take 1 ounce of that honey for a bee to fly around the world?
Yeah, that sounds about right. They're crazy stats, aren't they? The little creatures, the little insects work very, very hard.
Let's start with honey and your business. Chris, I'll come to you first. So Black Bee Honey, if you can, give us a kind of a short history of your business.
Paul and I are graphic designers by trade. We met in a design studio. We both had a love of bees. We took a friend on a beekeeping course, and we enjoyed it more than him. Then I ended up going to New Zealand, got a job as a bee farmer, came back. Paul and I set up Beehive Rental Company in London, and the honey did really well. So we decided to sort of shelve the kind of hipster beekeeper on a rooftop part of the business and launch Black Bee Honey. And we did that about 3.5 years ago. And all our honey is raw, British, unblended, unpasteurized, straight from the hive. Just trying to be as pure and natural as we can possibly be with our products.
And Paul, you've done really well to get listed in places like Ocado and Planet Organic. And I know you're working hard to get into the big supermarkets. Just how tough is that these days?
It feels like a brick wall at times. Yeah, I mean, it's they're very driven by, price, obviously. And having a premium product, it makes it a lot more of a challenge. So the honey category has traditionally gone more and more in a cheaper direction, so it seems like a bit of a race to get the cheapest honey on the shelf. So when you're trying to offer them a product which is going in the opposite direction, that's quite a big challenge.
You talk about the category. I'll show my colours. I'm the in-house planner. Am I right that there's really only two major brands in the UK and the rest of the market is own label? Then there's a mass of specialist brands like yours. Is that a fair summation of the market?
Yeah, I mean, we kind of sit somewhere in the middle. So we're going for the best British honey brand, or the most recognised British honey brand, which doesn't really exist at the moment, because the biggest honey brands are importing almost all of the honey that they sell. So that will be coming from China, from Mexico, Argentina, Eastern Europe, various places around the world. And then you've got the Manuka brands, which take up quite a lot of space in the supermarket shelf. But price-wise, that is almost in a completely different league, mainly down to sort of marketing, genius marketing tactics, which we're trying to adopt ourselves. There's kind of a bit of a a black hole in the middle, and then you've got loads of very much like smaller producers. So we're kind of trying to, sit in the middle of the kind of the behemoth kind of multinationals and your local beekeeper down the road.
Talk a bit more about kind of some of the provenance stories, because certainly for me in the pre-chat with you guys, in terms of kind of the truth, I suppose, about where the honey comes from, the quality. So Chris, coming to you and kind of off the back of thinking about this big supermarkets, you guys have done your own research into the provenance story of some of these other brands and some of the claims that they're making. But as we're learning, I certainly am from you guys, that's kind of quite far from the truth. And Paul, you did start to talk about that. But Chris, tell us a bit more about kind of what you discovered in terms of the actual quality, the actual support that happens within these current big brands.
Well, when you've tasted honey straight from the hive, if you know a local beekeeper and you try their honey and then you try something from a supermarket shelf, it's all in the taste. That a lot of the brands on in the big supermarkets, they just taste sweet, taste of sort of syrupy. It's and that's where a lot of the counterfeit is apparently done. It's like a lot of this honey is supposedly like sugar syrup and adulterated with what, you know, millions of different things. And if you've ever seen, there's a great TV show called, what's it called? There's a food show on Netflix. And there's a great episode on there about honey. And it points to places like China, who've now managed to circumvent any tests that you can do to sort of prove that it's honey. You know, there's laboratories that can fool the testing system. So it's almost impossible to find a lot of this adulterated honey as well. But there seems to be a lot of it around. It seems to be on the rise. I think last time I read something, there was that cases were up 30%, and honey amongst things like booze are one of the most sort of dodgy foodstuffs out there.
I mean, yeah, that was going to be my next question. Kind of how do you circumnavigate the legislation and regulations in place? But I've obviously found a way. And just on that, Chris, we'll drop in the notes that TV show once we'll have a look afterwards.
Yeah, it's actually called Rotten, I think.
That's it, Rotten.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you mentioned that you both got a passion for bees. You're both beekeepers. What is the fascination with bees? And do you feel you've got some sort of relationship with them?
Yeah, I guess my thing with beekeeping is it's quite a meditative process. So you have to be very focused and calm when you're in a hive. And when we started beekeeping in London, it was quite a sort of contrast in experience to sort of be surrounded by big concrete buildings and then be surrounded by 50,000 bees on a rooftop. And I think we really, really enjoyed that, the connection with nature in the city environment. The relationship with your bees, I think, just kind of grows over time, and you're always learning new stuff. There's always something going on in a hive which will challenge you, which you didn't expect. So it's something which is kind of ticks a lot of boxes from a kind of almost like a sort of well-being point of view, but also from a cerebral point of view of like how much you can learn.
I can understand the cerebral thing. I mean, you're taking me to a place where, you know, we think of ourselves being quite powerful in terms of scale. We're quite a big animal. And yet there's this tiny creature that yet manages to achieve so much. So I can understand that. Tell me more about the meditative stuff. How does being with bees help you be more mindful?
Because if you're not, then you're probably going to get stung more. So it's kind of like a sort of meditation with sort of electrodes stuck to your fingers if you're not, you know, doing the meditation. The bees will pick up on your behavior. So if you're kind of really rushing to get to the next hive, or if you're very nervous, or if you've got a stinking hangover, they'll kind of pick up on that and they will probably sting you. So you have to sort of try and regulate your own behavior. So, you know, that kind of, means that you're in a more relaxed state, but it's also the focus on what you're doing. You know, you have to be very focused on each frame, and you're looking for specific things. And that concentration as well is like part of that sort of mindful experience.
And do the stings get any easier?
I started swelling up at the beginning. I'd get like massive arms and legs and like be sort of like dragging them around behind me. And that sort of faded off after a while, thankfully. And Chris never had that. You never really had that reaction, did you?
No, but I did get, when we started off, when we did our beehive rental company back in the day, we had bees in our back garden, and some of them were pretty angry. We got them from some dodgy beekeeper. And Paul and I think we'd already taken the honey off and we were putting the hive back together or something. Something went on in it. Anyway, they went nuts. They went ballistic, and they're very good. They know they go for your soft spots, or they go for your kind of unguarded spot. So they went for my ankles, and where they would go for your face, they go for your wrists. I had like, I don't know, about 20 stings around each ankle. And we're both like running away. It's a bit of a nightmare. But yeah, this thing, you get a bit of an immunity to it if you keep on getting stung. But also, like Paul says, once you've been beekeeping a while, you learn to be a bit more in tune with the hive, with the bees. You get a bit more zen. And they sting you less just because you know what you're doing and you're not as clumsy around them.
I think this is, I'm so fascinated by this. There's so much, obviously, kind of in current culture about better connecting with nature, with kind of, plant life, animal life. So yeah, it's amazing that this is happening and on certain levels. So and talking about the stings, it's definitely an occupational hazard. My mind was going to kind of what a Black Bee Honey head of HR is putting into their kind of contract to say potential risks of working with us. Please sign here. Anyway, on kind of talking of fascination, Chris, coming to you to build on what Paul's been talking about, kind of what can we, and I'll put myself definitely in someone that doesn't know much, kind of what can we learn from like what goes on in the hive? You know, what can we as humans like learn from the complexity and fascination of the dynamics of a beehive?
Well, they're a super organism, one of the few. So they all, a single bee on its own is useless, but together, collaboratively, they can produce loads of delicious honey. They can build wax structures that is essentially their house. They can fly for miles and sense, like they've got something called a waggle dance, which one bee will tell another in the darkness of the hive. They'll tell the other bees how far away and in what direction the best nectar source is. And then the other bees will fly off and find it. They're very efficient, they're very efficient creatures. It's I think the fact that they work together as a unit is probably one of the most amazing things for me.
Talking about cultural relevance, certainly in terms of what's very big news, I suppose, and has been for some time now, these kind of a lot of stories we hear and see kind of suggesting the bee population is kind of going to dangerously low levels and kind of that as an implication with signing our own death warrant, kind of how, I guess if you can help explain that, Paul, kind of how important are bees to our survival?
The honeybee pollinates a huge amount of crops that we consume. So without a honeybee being such a efficient pollinator, then you would see an impact on what food you'd be able to put on the table. So that's definitely a fact. But the honeybee is one of thousands of insect pollinators, which will all be pollinating different things. So it's not just the honeybee, which is a pollinator and will be pollinating foods, like honeybees and bumblebees are used on farms to pollinate crops. But then there's, a multitude of other flying insects that will be doing the same thing. And they're all really exposed to the same threats. The biggest one would be lack of habitat. So modern farming and, man's complete kind of transformation of the landscape from, a mixture of forests and wildflower meadows has now, been massively transformed, and modern farming gives you huge areas of monocrops, which obviously wouldn't have existed. And a lot of those crops might have no benefit to the wildlife around it. So, farming is trying to reduce the impacts of that problem with pollinator strips around farms. But, it's really a drop in the ocean compared to what has been lost. So it's that and then combined with the problem of a massive reliance on agrochemicals in modern farming means that not only have they lost the habitat, then they're being sprayed with stuff which is, killing them or, massively, detrimental to their health. So we're kind of hitting them with those two things, and that, both of those in combination, as well as other, environmental stress factors, just causes like massive declines in populations. And I don't think people are really aware of how few like feral or, bee colonies there are in the wild, like because they would naturally be in tree cavities. So, they need tree cavities to live in naturally. So the numbers that would be in the wild is much reduced, and beekeepers are, maintaining numbers through keeping them in beehives.
I mean, there's a simple hypothesis that not enough people know about that, you know, the severity of it. I mean, I guess navigating a bit back to your business, and I'll stick with you, Paul, in terms of, it's clear already what you stand for in terms of Black Bee Honey, but in terms of your communications and your brand, and I know purpose is important from speaking to you beforehand, like that story about the bees, how important to that is that for your communications?
Well, I think it's kind of everything really, because it feels like the story there is like massive, like, you know, just from the story of the bee from the hive to the flower to the honey jar, and then the wider story of how bees sit within, you know, the ecosystem and the stories going on there. They're like, there's so much there. And I think it's quite, there's not that many food brands that would be able to draw on that sort of massive story. And, you know, and I think that's part of our responsibility, and something which hasn't really been done traditionally by other brands, is to, you know, really, you know, convey that story to people.
Yeah. Sticking to kind of talking a bit more about your business. So Chris, very interested to hear that you're kind of on the journey to become certified B Corp. Kind of how you find that process. We've got other kind of friends of the agency that are going through that, and kind of, yeah, how's it going and what have you learned from the process?
Well, Izzy, our one and only staff member, has been sort of doing the bulk of the work, but from what I gathered and what I've seen of what she's been doing, there's a lot of documentation. It's very, very thorough as well. Like, you know, you can't get away with anything with these with the certification. Luckily we're a small team. I think trying to do something like this from the outset is probably a lot easier than doing it in a multinational corporation, so I think that puts us in good stead. But yeah, I think just having that mark, having that certification would be great. And it's quite a recognized thing now, and yeah, it ticks a lot of the boxes that Paul and I that we set the company up based on. So yeah, hopefully some point very soon we will become certified and we can start shouting about it.
And Paul, earlier we were talking about the honey category. How is it developing? Is it still growing? And where is the innovation in the category and in honey products?
So honey as a whole, I think, was growing about 15-20%. 2019 on the latest figures from that we've been able to access. But I would say over the last 12 months, like, we've seen sales go up by about 400%. So I'd imagine, you know, supermarkets are probably seeing pretty big increases in sales as well. And I think that's being driven by, you know, partly being driven by people being home and honey being a breakfast product and breakfasting at home. But we've also just seen like a huge upsurge in people really wanting to get behind smaller British producers. I don't know what's driving that particularly right now, but yeah, I mean, I think we felt when we started the company that there was a real opportunity there to be, you know, really hammering home the, you know, the story of provenance and quality, and that seems to be becoming much more of a kind of driver for customers now.
And what about your brand and your business? What innovations would you like to see for Black Bee?
As a category, innovation is sort of very slow. You don't get many new brands coming into honey, because it's quite a different product to be dealing with than a lot of others. So it seems to be like you start off as a beekeeper and go into it rather than, you know, just seeing it as a sort of, you know, business opportunity. Or I think for us, you know, we're looking at various options at the moment, because honey is terrible on margin. Like, it's a real battle. British honey is ridiculously expensive compared to honeys that you can import from elsewhere, so that's just like a real battle. So I think looking at other products which use British quality honeys as an ingredient is something that we want to look at a lot more, because it then allows us to kind of take a bit of pressure off, you know, looking at products that you know, in like, it's seeing good growth at the moment, so we can kind of pick and choose products where we feel like honey could work well with those.
Chris, still thinking about your future, here's one of our questions that we ask every now and again. If you could pick your dream investor, who would they be and why?
I think that's going to be one for Paul, but I thought about, I was thinking about who's got bees and who's got loads of money. David Beckham, he loves bees, right? He'd be a good investor. I like him. Or Bez. I think he probably hasn't got much money left, but Bez is another bee.
I actually saw Bez talking about bees the other day. So yeah, maybe that's an avenue for you.
I don't know how many companies he's currently mentoring on business strategy. Maybe he is. I don't know.
A non-exec, yeah.
Yeah, I've always really respected and admired Yvon Chouinard from Patagonia, because you know he took an outdoor clothing company and completely married it with environmental issues, and I feel like our product and how it's produced is so married to environmental issues that it it's a similar kind of background story, and like what he's achieved, the way that he's tried to change the way people work within companies, the way he's using the company to create like global initiatives around massive environmental change. I mean, I don't know how much we can achieve, but he's a huge inspiration, and he's still going strong in his 80s. So I think he would be at the top of my list.
I can't let you guys go without, so I guess with your graphic design background and with this being a kind of marketing and advertising podcast, hear about kind of your branding journey and kind of how was that for you both? Did you do that yourselves? And kind of, yeah, what do you see next for the brand itself?
Well, we started off doing most of it ourselves. I came up with a very sort of subpar Black Bee honey logo, and did a lot of trawling through design blogs and Pinterest for packaging design, because I'd never done it before. So we got some in ready for trade shows, and we got listed with Whole Foods on the back of our packaging. I even said to the buyer, I said, do you want to try it? She's like, no, it looks great. That was, so kind of it worked in that respect. But then Paul found a great illustrator called Marcus Walters, who redid our logo for us, or did a proper version of our logo for us. And we continue to do the most of the design work ourselves. But that design, the design that's there now, the design that was done initially, was sort of catered towards the supermarket customer. So something that was reasonably commercial and approachable by your average supermarket punter. But it seems that the buyers in supermarkets don't want to pay for our honey. So we're looking now to try and premiumize our design a bit more, because the price point is a bit higher. So like our London honey, for instance, we use a gold foil on it. We're going to be re-looking at it, trying to make it look a bit more premium so that we can command the prices that we're asking.
Well, your anecdote about that kind of food show sums up branding and packaging perfectly, doesn't it?
It looks crazy. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe you didn't even want to try the stuff. So yeah, we'll have that on the shelves. It's been there ever since. Amazing.
I mean, eating with your eyes, I think, starts with the packaging, in my opinion. So there you go. All right. Well, talking of kind of eating, taste, we've touched on. Let's ask you both, if we may, kind of what's your favorite kind of meal or recipe that would include Black Bee honey?
Yeah, I always use a bit of honey when I'm like roasting some vegetables, like with carrots or parsnips and things, because it gives it like quite a savoury sweetness to it, which is quite nice. And you're using it as part of a glaze. Honey works really well with chili. So if you just chop up some fresh chili and honey and use it on a glaze on some ham or something, that can work really well.
Yeah, I'm down with Paul. Glazes are good. I'm not as culinary as Paul, unfortunately, but salmon. I like to use a honey, like a marinade for some salmon, maybe with a little bit of lime juice. Otherwise, I'm quite boring. I like to have it on my porridge every morning, or as a sweetener for some coffee.
Well, I'm with you there. To make the bee's knees cocktail, which I think is honey, gin, and is it vermouth? And he said vermouth. I'm not a massive expert with cocktails, but it did sound like a pretty good one, the bee's knees honey cocktail.
It sounds great. Definitely. I'm with you, Paul. Yeah, I'm a honey on my breakfast. But I've seen it actually a lot more on pizzas recently. I'm sure it's not a brand new thing, but I've seen in a couple of, I won't name the brands, but a couple of kind of high street pizza chains are now introducing honey into pizza. I've tried one of them after a few drinks, kind of initially skeptical, but it was actually delicious. So hopefully that could be an avenue for black bee inspiration, should we say, on pizzas. Our question we ask all of our guests before we send you home is, what is your favourite TV ad and why? And as this is an audio medium, please do your best to describe it if you can. But Chris, we'll start with you. What's yours?
I was struggling to remember the name of this, but it's that Mr. Soft Soft Mints ad from the, was it the early, mid-80s maybe? And it's the tune that sticks in my head. It's a really kind of bouncy tune. The actual ad itself is just like so surreal. Everything's kind of soft and rearranged, as they say in the lyrics. I think it just stuck in my head. I used to watch a lot of TV. Don't watch so much anymore. So I was trying to think of something that trying to remember the name of that ad, because I think it's the tune basically that's stuck in my head. It's just so surreal and so weird. I don't think I've even ever tried a soft mint, but
Mr. Soft, turn around and fast the world to watch the things you're going.
And of course, we're on Zoom here, and sadly, the audio medium will not convey the beautiful arm movements you were doing for us, Chris. As you just couldn't help it, could you? Because that's what the TV ad evoked for you. And as Paul
leaning
says,
back, isn't it? Yeah.
As Paul says, music. I am a fan of the 70s. It's kind of my era. So that song was from 1974, and it was originally by Steve Harley and Cockney Rebel. It was originally called Mr. Soft. So a bit of, you can imagine the creative team. They probably weren't Googling in 1986 when they made the ad. The agency was Boaz Massimi Pollitt. Also my favourite agency, because they made the Famash Get Smash ad, which is the best, obviously. But anyway, I'm biased. But the story is that they approached Steve Harley if they could use the song, and he was, you know, all a bit creative about it, going, oh, I don't know about that. But he did sell them the rights to the song so that they could rewrite the lyrics, they could use the music, and they re-recorded it with a sound-alike singer and a band. And as I said, to this day, the majority of people still think it's Steve Harley, but it's not. But a great choice.
So I went for something much not quite as fun as Chris's choice, which when he told me that, I cracked up, because I hadn't remembered that advert for many, many years. It's a classic. I went for the Stella Artois advert, which is directed by Jonathan Glazier. If you haven't seen it, the premise of the ad is that there's an old man who's lying in bed, and he's on his last legs, and he's reeling off the things that he wants as his final wishes. He wants a flower from the tree in the garden, and then he wants some honey from his hives, which is obviously very appropriate, from some beautiful skeps. I think it's in the French countryside. And his final choice is a pint of Stella, which his son goes out to get from the local pub and can't resist drinking it by the time he gets home, and then frames the vicar who's coming in to perform his final rites, and blames the vicar's drinking problem for the empty pint glass. I mean, it's very, very beautifully shot, and quite a clever and funny ad. And obviously, Jonathan Glazier is a bit of a legend. So yeah, he'd done quite a few pretty spectacular ads, but I think that was my favourite.
Thank you. Yeah, that was from 1997. The agency were Low London. They might have been called Low Howard Spink, I think, in those days. And yeah, the classic Jonathan Glazer ad is The Surfer by Guinness. Goodness knows what the budget was for that. Paul, we, you and I can only dream of those kind of budgets for an ad. But, I mean, he's kind of legend because he's produced feature films. If I said Sexy Beast, he directed that with Ray Winston and Ben Kingsley. So, yeah, quite a ledge in our world. And Paul, you and I were saying that the ad, in actual fact, is derivative, isn't it? It's from a French film.
Yes, Jean de Florette. And I think, yeah, it's been pretty much lifted from that, but kind of, I guess, you know, in a pretty blatant way, but in a, you know, really clever and beautiful way. So I really like that kind of, when people are quite referential, you know, on like, you know, cultural history within advertising. It's quite nice, isn't it?
And the music too. The music is from Jean de Florette,
okay,
which,
right,
I think is Verdi's La Forza del Destino in my best GCSE Italian. So they carried it all the way through. Very, very, yeah, clever.
Yeah, and if nothing else, it's proven that bees can look beautiful in mainstream advertising. So there's a bit of inspiration for the Black Bee Honey TV ad whenever that happens in the, yeah, hopefully yeah, not too distant future.
I'm going to speak to Jonathan about that.
Well, look, Paul, Chris, great ad choices, great chat. Thank you both so much for joining us. I, for one, have learnt an awful lot. And yeah, I think at times it's felt a bit like a David Attenborough episode. So that is no bad thing at all. So thanks for your time. We wish you all the best for the future, and hopefully we'll get a chance to chat again soon. So thanks.